Welcome to this week's episode of From Out of the City. This is William F. DeVault, the romantic poet of the internet, coming to you from out of the City of Legends, talking about and reading poetry for your entertainment and amusement purposes, and possibly even a little education along the way. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. A few years back, while prepping my manuscript for the book From an Unexpected Quarter, one of the poems I included in that was a piece I had written for the Morgantown, West Virginia, Morgantown High School graduating class of 1998. That was the 25th anniversary of my graduation from the class. I sent off a copy of the poem along with several boxes of books to be given as gifts to the graduates. I never heard back, and I don't know of anybody who actually got the books, so I don't know if the books were eaten in transit or just there were a lot of really ungracious recipients. I'll presume, for the sake of argument, the former. But anyway, the poem, entitled The Morning Is Upon Us, was written to be a generic poem to celebrate graduation or commencement. And seeing as this is the first weekend of the year when we really start getting heavily into the college and high school commencements, I figured this would be a good time for me to read it for the show. The wind still drives us, fate and the kiss of distant gods, but we have seen the first photic annunciations of day, and we make our way into the slipstream of life, the odds still unbeatable, but we are resolute rogues in this way. We give over the tiller to no other, for in a universe where God does not deny us the choice of roads, what right has flesh or mortal agency to lay the boys and chart the wheel and say to us in voices ripe with a coward's bullying that we can do nothing but what they would have us do? For do we not feel what we alone can feel and chart what we alone can plan and kiss with eyes open or closed of our own volition? Beyond the limitations of the form and aspect of our fate, we are the caretakers of a history yet unwritten, our position in the constellations that future generations shall navigate by is yet plastic to the touch. We have our Creator's permission to sail to the edge of the world or to sew sails for those who dare to. We have our Creator's blessing to make of life a feast of a funeral. You have the inalienable option to dream mighty dreams if you care to, and to swear in a tongue alien to all but you and God that you will fall not to the night, for the morning is upon us and we are born anew. That entire poem is about growth, change, evolution, resolution, moving forward, stepping out of the shadows. The dichotomy and the conflict that comes from changes in our lives drives some of the best works of art out there. It is that conflict, that yin-yang, that resolution of dichotomous forces that leads us to express ourselves, to express the stress, to express the remarkable sensation of change that we confront. Whether that change, whether that evolution, whether that step out of the shadows is a first kiss, the birth of a child, graduation from high school, change of jobs, graduation from college, a death in the family. These are all moments in which inspiration is flinted into sparks. It's something that if you read almost any good poem, you'll find it in there. As an example of conflicts driving a piece, from that same book, From an Unexpected Quarter, there's a poem called The Amomancer Dances in the Shadows. And as you listen to it, see if you can imagine the state of mind of the author, myself, at the time when he wrote it. What was driving him to think these thoughts, to ask these questions? Think about it. Can you walk for me softly, like a dream that sheds the night, to transform the cradled questions in a subtle, steady light? What colors colding passion when the palate has run dry? What shades are surest evidence when the premise is a lie? Who are we to wait and wonder when the wanderlust returns? What spell are we fallen under that lays ashes to our burns? Can you walk for me softly, like a dream that sheds the night, to transform the cradled questions in a subtle, steady light? Can you drink to my memory when the Tantalus runs dry, leaving dust and rust and lusty crust our black thirst to deny? What use is there for hunger when the baker's bowl is crushed? What purpose grows from sacrifice with the martyr's credo hushed? When shall we make harvest when dead husks are all that's sown? What shall we dare inherit when our values we disown? Can you drink to my memory when the Tantalus runs dry, leaving dust and rust and lusty crust our black thirst to deny? Can you show to me the difference between the streetlights and the sun, when the darkness in which we bled is shed and the future is begun? Have you dared to drink the dregs of the wine of your own lies? Have you measured the width of your life's path with only half-open eyes? Will you teach to me the difference between strong evil and weak fear? Do you know the test that tells the tale in the tableau of a tear? Can you show to me the difference between the streetlights and the sun, when the darkness in which we bled is shed and the future is begun? Change, growth, evolution, they're all essential elements in the human condition. Without change, without growth, without evolution, we cannot adapt to anything that changes in our sphere. We become stagnant. We become complacent. We become mired in place by forces and two things that are of little or no true value to us, because they end up denying us the ability to change. We exercise free will in order that we might find our own way. I hope in some small way my poetry celebrates free will, choice, evolution, change, hope, dreams, love, faith, religion, all these things, some that sometimes come in conflict. But that's the nature of the beast. That's the nature of the universe. God did not create the universe as a Teflon slide from the top to the bottom. There are bumps and ridges and hills and valleys and deserts and oceans to climb and cross and stumble over all along the way. And it is in these obstacles, these opportunities for growth and evolution, that we develop our own tools for coping. And my primary one is my writing. Without my writing, I would go stark raving mad. I would have gone stark raving mad a long time ago without it. Who knows, maybe I am anyway. But the bottom line is, you have the choice. And to all you graduates out there, whether you're graduating high school, college, trade school, whatever, you're standing right now at a cusp in your life, an opportunity. There is more than one road before you. The morning is upon you. You need to make some decisions. Even if your decision is just to go where the wind blows you, that's still a decision. And having made those decisions, take responsibility for them. You ever see a man try and make up his mind by flipping a coin? He always knows what he wants. He pulls out that quarter and he goes, "Heads I ask Betty out, tails I ask Veronica." And he flips the coin and it comes down tails and he goes, "Let's make it 2 out of 3. He's going to ask Betty out. Coin said Veronica. But he's going to flip for 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 5 or 17 out of 33 until the coin says Betty. And then he's going to ask Betty. And if she turns him down, or if the date is lousy, or if he finds out later he would have had more fun with Veronica, he can blame the coin because he doesn't want to take responsibility for his own actions. We are at our best when we take responsibility for our own actions. Lord knows I've screwed up enough in this life. Any man with a couple divorces on his rap sheet, has to say that. I've avoided some other pits. You're talking to a guy or listening to a guy who has no criminal record. But I've made some blunders, and I've paid for them, and I will continue to pay for them. And sometimes I've chosen to pay for them going in, because that's what being a grown-up is all about, taking responsibility for your own actions, not trying to blame others, not trying to wag your finger, not trying to make excuses. You don't grow from escaping. You grow from confronting. And in my writings, I seek to do that. And in the world, every time somebody steps up and says, yeah, that was my idea, didn't work out, well, at least next time we know better, the world gets a little better, a little nicer. Years ago, when I worked as a consultant in the Beltway Bandit companies in the Washington, D.C. area, I worked for a company that every time a project ended, we'd hold a postmortem where we would analyze what went right and what went wrong with the project. That was considered de rigueur. That was required. Well, a few years after that, I was working at a different company, and we had a project that was winding down, and I said, well, we need to arrange for the postmortem. And the company officer I was working directly under went nuts. He was like, "What? You know, why would we do that?" I said, well, we need to do an analysis of what went right and what went wrong. And he was petrified of this. He went nuts over it because it just scared him. He was sure that at least one finger would point at him where we might have made slightly better profits or something. Don't be afraid of taking responsibility for your actions. Don't be afraid of stepping up and making mistakes. I'd rather make a mistake than an excuse. Now, as I'm getting ready to leave you for this weekend, don't worry, I'll be back next weekend. I've got a little surprise for you. It's a piece that I recorded earlier this week and released as a single out to the web. But I got such great response to it, I decided to go ahead and include it as the closing piece this week. Well, there's a tiny intro to it and an outro. The name of the poem is Bragi to Freya on his deathbed. Bragi was the Norse god of eloquence and poetry. Whenever you see Bragi hanging around in one of my poems, I'm talking about me. Freya was his wife. Freya was the goddess of youth and beauty and fertility. And they were an odd couple. But this poem is about wanting to give up, give out, give in to the inevitable, and then finding your soul again. Stepping up and saying, no, I gotta keep going, I gotta keep fighting. I can't quit. There are days when you will feel this way, when you will feel like, I've taken all the damage I want to take, just leave me here. Come back in a few days and dig a hole. Can't do that. You're not fighting for yourself in this life, you're fighting for everybody else. If you can't do anything more for yourself, you can probably do something for somebody else. We're counting on you. This world with all its billions of people, we're counting on you to step up. And if you can't make your life better, make somebody else's life a little better. If you can't find love, give love. If you can't make peace, at least don't make war. If you can't buy your way out of your troubles, at least don't make new troubles for other people. Be part of our civilization. Part of our civilization. That's right. It's a big, beautiful world, and we all need to be part of it. Every last one of us. So I leave you with Bragi to Freya on his deathbed. Again, congratulations to all the graduates out there. You've done well. Now let's see what you do with what you've done. Again, this is William F. DeVault, the romantic poet of the internet, coming to you from out of the city. This is William F. DeVault. The other day, I wrote a piece entitled Bragi to Freya on his deathbed. And almost immediately after I posted it, I received an email asking, how would you read this piece? Good question. Here's my answer. I am not blind to the beauty, but like a paralyzed man, his bed a prison, unable to touch or taste or smell. Only those things brought to him, or that, by accident, slip through the walls of glass and steel and watchful eyes that institutionalize lies to their own ends. The sterility befriends those whose clothes tell a tale of wanderlust in worn soles and frayed hems and dust, dust of a thousand roads. Some walked to the horizon, some merely tested with timid toes, like an unfamiliar water pool at dawn, yawning a frigid maw to pull you in and cramp body and soul. I am not blind to the beauty, but bound to it. The sound of it is like music to a deaf man who can perceive the bass line as it shakes the snakes from the foundations of a world made of a necessity, a necessary doubt of things spoken with too much conviction, words used like truncheons to beat down relevant inconveniences. The luxury of truth is something that few afford in the discordant umbilical left to hang. To dangle at an angle on the edge of cliffs we once leapt from, unafraid of the consequences of gravity and the pursuit of knowledge. I can see it, eyes open or closed, limbs and lips languid and posed like posturing candidates for a title I am not sure I would or should award again. I am not blind to the beauty. I am not deaf to the music. I am not cold to your touch. I am not tongue-numb to your taste. I am not unaware of your perfume as you enter this ruin. Leave a telltale marker to be followed into Elysium if I am willing to rise from my chosen catalepsy and wear again the patchwork pelts and the mark of my station and office to follow where I swore I would go when the word was given in silent mouthing from across the room, but in plain sight. For I am not blind to the beauty as I plant my fists in the stones and press upwards with aching muscles to fulfill that which is ordained of me. That's how I'd read it.